Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I ask you all, if you wouldn't mind, turning to the book of Galatians. That's in the New Testament. Galatians. Today, I want to look at the short letter which Paul wrote to the Galatians. Because in this 1 6-chapter letter, which I recommend you all read at some point, though not at this moment, as it will take you approximately half an hour. But if you read it, you will discover that there is a lot of information about the man Paul and his beliefs shared with us through this letter of correction. But before we go into the correction concept of the letter, let's understand how this letter came about. Paul tells us within the letter content that he himself had been sick, not well, when he had come to Galatia. The people had listened to him. They acknowledged that he wasn't in perfect health. They acknowledged his infirmities. And he says that if it had been possible, they would have even taken their eyes and given them to him. Yet they received him not despising his weakness, but as if he had been the Son of God himself. Because the message of hope and understanding that he brought to them totally changed their outlook on life. For Paul, these people were very, very special to him. He wanted them to grow and mature as his children in the faith, special to him. So when he received word that there was disturbing influences affecting the church, he was a little upset. Now, initially we need to understand what these disturbing influences were. Christians had come from Jerusalem with one purpose: to spread and teach their understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles. And so, as previously Paul would have went to all the synagogues and spoke and offered Christianity to the Jews, these Christians were now coming along and they were finding little pockets of the church already established, and they were joining with them and sharing their message and their understanding as Christian Jews. So as they were explaining that Jesus was a Jew and how the Jerusalem church was the head church and how everything was organized from there and how everything else was an outreach from Jerusalem, and therefore they presented that they had a dominance, a better ministry, so to speak. But they had a problem. The Gentile churches had a number of main differences, very significant differences from Jewish churches, even Jewish Christian churches. And one of these differences was that the women and the men shared the same hall seated together. They met as one. There was Greeks, there was Romans, there was Jews, all in the one place. There was absolutely no separation. Nothing done. And for the Jewish Christians of the time, this was very, very difficult because it wasn't part of their custom. It wasn't part of their law, and it wasn't how they understood things should be. The only way they could possibly understand as to how to ratify it would be to teach the law. And this is what we have. A situation where these individuals, with the best intentions in the world, though incorrectly placed, began to teach the law. And they began to say there are things you shouldn't eat. There are things you shouldn't do. You should separate yourself. You shouldn't mix your cloth fabrics together. And when you're out in the marketplace, when you come in, you should ritually start to wash your hands. You don't eat unless you wash your hands 7 times. And they began to teach all of these customs and regulations that they had been taught and explained to them over the years. And finally they got to the point that true Christians are separated, made holy by Christ. And as such we should carry the mark of that separation as it was given initially by Moses. And then for they taught circumcision. To the Galatians, they knew Paul was a Jew. They knew he had used similar language with them when he told them about the wonderful message of salvation and of the truth. He understood all of these things. They were taught to the highest degree. But he had not insisted that they should change and accept Jewish practice in any way whatsoever. He told them that God broke down the wall of division through Jesus Christ. That he made women and men equals. He said that the Jew and the Greek, or if we like, the Gentile, were no different in the eyes of God, as all through Christ became his personal children. And that was the wonderful difference to the gospel. But that was not being now explained to the Galatians. Because the Jerusalem church had been recognized as the mother church, it was natural for these Galatian Christians to believe that what they were being told was true. That it was a necessary part of their relationship with God. So they began to agree to becoming circumcised, to separating themselves into different groups, to avoid certain foods, and to take on all the ritual of the Jewish religion. Until somebody wrote to Paul. When Paul heard what was happening, he was enraged. We don't fully get the concept here as we read Galatians of how Paul was feeling, but sometimes if you read some of the older versions that have been wrote in, shall we say, less PC English, we get the idea that he is not a happy man at all. And the reason he's not happy is because he sees this in a very simple way. Before Christ, you could become a servant of God. You could be hired by God. And he would put you to work in his field. And you would benefit from all his bounty and all his glory as his servant. But through Jesus Christ, God was not calling you into his house to be a servant. But rather, he was revealing that you were his children. Well, when we are young, Paul said, it's hard to distinguish between the role of the child and the role of the servant, because the child, until it comes to understanding, is treated like a servant. And that was the purpose of the law, to bring us to our understanding of the need of the fullness of Christ. But once Christ has been revealed, once that has happened, we are then to be brought into the family as children. To put aside the teachings that were instructing us, which we were subject to, because we are now meant to take on the responsibilities of the family. So Paul's looking at this from two different ways. He's saying, before you were separated, but now you have been joined to God. Before you were separated for special use, taken out of this world and put to one side, anointed for the purpose of serving God. But now you have been taken and brought into the very family of God through Jesus Christ. There is no need for a red bog to be sacrificed, burnt to ashes, and those ashes to be used in purification in preparation for a people of their sins, because Christ has died for us. We are no longer subject to the schoolmaster. So Paul's angry. He's very much in a situation where he wants to explain to people what is happening here. But we can understand the Jewish Christians. We can see it from their perspective. We can analyze it from their perspective, and we can play a devil's advocate all we like. But Paul's teaching is different. But I said that we learn a lot about Paul here in this book of Galatians, and we do. Paul tells us that he was a Jew that was zealous for his religious beliefs. He didn't say it was wrong to be zealous. Instead, if you're zealous for the right reasons, it's a good thing. But he was zealous for the teachings of Moses, to the point where he persecuted the church. He was zealous to ensure that the status quo established by all those rabbis over the thousands of years since the law had been given would remain, and that there wouldn't be an opportunity for the Jews to again have to go into captivity because they lost the law. He was zealous for all these things. He was zealous for his people, until one day God stopped him. God stopped him in his tracks. A light shone around him. A voice spoke from heaven. And he couldn't believe what he was being told. Did he question it? Did he say, must have been something I ate? Maybe something I digested, disagreed with me? No. Paul's reaction here was that the people with him saw the light, but they didn't hear the voice that spoke to him. As for him, the light had been so bright that he discovered that he couldn't see after it. He was made temporarily blind. But this blindness didn't leave after a few hours, as would have been expected. It stayed with him for 3 days. In those 3 days, Paul refused food and water, because he knew he had just had a visitation from God. And his problem was, God had identified himself as the man, Jesus Christ. After the 3 days, a knock came to the door of where Paul was staying, and a disciple of the Lord came in and said that he had been sent to anoint Paul and to baptize Paul. And as soon as he was baptized and anointed, Paul received back his sight. He broke his fast and he started his work there at that time. But here's an interesting thing which Paul reveals to us here in this book of Galatians. He says, nice and simply, I did not go and check out from men how to worship God in this way. I didn't do that. But rather, I learned by the revelation of Jesus Christ himself, as one who was taught out of time. It is Paul who reminds us, of course, that there was a total of approximately 500 individuals, witnesses, who had seen Jesus Christ alive after the crucifixion. 500 witnesses. The Jewish law, which Paul was an expert in, commands us to accept the witness of 2 or 3. A lot of people overlook that. It doesn't suggest that you should maybe listen to them. It tells you, you must accept the witness of 2 or 3. You don't have to accept the witness of 1, but you do have to accept the witness of 2 or 3. So if you meet 2 or 3 good people who are reliable sources and recognized as such, and they make a declaration of an event that has happened, it is expedient for you to believe it. Paul said, we don't have 2 or 3. 500 500. 500! You know, I was thinking about today, our era, what we have grown up into, how our modern society works. And I realize that I've often heard testimonies by two or three people, and I've totally rejected it because it's so far-fetched. I don't believe testimonies of two or three people. Two or three people tell me that they saw UFOs coming down from space, and it landed in a small American town and made a big difference. I find that very hard to believe. Yet they maintain it faithfully that it happened. If I'm under the law, I'm guilty because I can't believe those witnesses. And there are more than two or three as well. You see, there's things that we hear and we're told by two or three witnesses that we can't believe because they don't make sense to us. If you met a man who came and had the reputation and had letters with him that he could imprison Christians, had suddenly changed his mind and become a Christian because of an event which happened on the road, even though he'd been made blind and people with them were able to witness that they saw the light but didn't hear what voice spoke to him, would you believe them? Many of the Christians who Paul would have been expected to go and talk to and discuss wouldn't have believed him either. So Paul never went near them. Not for years. He didn't go to Jerusalem initially for 3 years, and he waited further, I think it was 15 years before he went back. Just to check that what he was doing was right. So Paul had this idea in his head of what it meant to be a Christian. And he had an understanding of what it meant to be a Jew. But he saw that while the two are related, they are not compatible. Because one is a servant and the other is the free owner, the freeborn. Again in Galatians, Paul brings this across. He says, have you not read that Abraham had two wives? Two children, one to the bond woman and one to the free. And he said, have you not read that the child of the bondwoman, which was just as much Abraham's child as the child of the free woman, persecuted the child of promise? And the command from God was that she should, along with the child, be put away. To a Jew, coming to that understanding, realizing that the bondwoman represented Jerusalem and the Jewish faith, and that the free woman represented Jerusalem from above that is to come as the King of Christ. This was startling. Would you have believed him? For many of the Jews, Jewish Christians I'm speaking about here, they had great difficulty with Paul's teaching, because he appeared to turn their belief structure upside down. Their system of belief was totally, always separation. You have to separate yourself from all the nations and people around you. They said, this is in the law, that we obey the law. The law teaches us about God. Therefore, we have to separate ourselves. But they separated themselves physically. Paul didn't disagree. He said you should separate yourself, but God has broke down the wall of separation in the natural, as in between peoples, between the sexes. He's broke that down between rich and poor, between noble and not noble. But he wants you still to be separated from the things of this world. And it was interesting, but that was where Israel, the Jewish nations, always fell down. They could understand the separation of themselves from the other nations. They could keep themselves from participating in the pagan rituals and aspects with strong discipline of law, but they couldn't keep their nose out of politics with all the different nations. They would go to war. They would agree to support this cause or that cause. They were proclaiming themselves as greater and mightier than all the rest of the nations around them. They never realized that the spirit of separation was from the world, not from each other, which Paul was trying to bring across. When God opened Christianity to the Gentiles, he embraced the Gentiles over the Jews, so that the Jews would realize what God was saying to them. They had been chosen for a purpose which they didn't fulfill. Therefore, to make them jealous, he opened salvation to us. He didn't reject them. He just wants to get their attention. We could be foolish and say that it's a bit like a marriage. Sometimes one partner might think that the other partner's not giving them enough attention, that they're not spending time with them, that somebody else has got between them. And so what the partner will do who's feeling slightly put off is they will begin to show attraction towards something else, hoping that their partner, who has been distracted, will notice and start to get jealous and give them more attention to win them back. It doesn't always work. Soap operas, there's a lot to put up against. So, Tara. But that's exactly what God was doing with the Gentiles. He was saying, my people Israel, they're too interested in all the things in this world rather than being interested in me. So I'm going to go and I'm going to make peace through my son with another people. All the peoples, all the nations of the earth, I'm going to make peace with them. So that my people Israel will say, what's going on here? What have we done wrong? We can't have this. We have to be part of this. And they'll come back to me. The sad thing is, that's not what happened. Israel followed her own path and ended up being, as a nation, lost. She didn't disappear. Jews are still all over the world. But as a nation, as a political power, as a country of influence, she lost it all. She was taken out of her land where she was allowed to serve God, to a place where she couldn't serve God. The only way she had opportunity back to God was through his offer of Christ. Still, she refused. And somehow, in this book of Galatians, Paul has noticed that. And it's made him very annoyed and very angry. He's not angry at the Galatians. He's not even angry at the Jerusalem church. He's not even angry at the Jews who are making these suggestions. He's angry because of what's going to happen. And he recognizes that as the old covenant has completed with Christ, that the rules, the regulations governing it are going to disappear. And that God's going to remove all that ritual. He's going to take away the temple. He's going to stop the sacrifices. And he's going to make it ridiculous, unacceptable, unable to happen. He's going to leave his people, the Jews, unable to perform any of their, how could we put it, their sacrifices for their sins. They would have no way back to God. Because without a temple, without the priesthood, they have no way of coming to God, except through the one who God had already declared, Jesus Christ. To Paul, this was an eye-opening experience. And so the idea that some of the Gentile Christians were being brought back into that old way, which was being got rid of and would disappear within a few short decades from when this was wrote, was what made him so cross. Today, 2,000 years later, we sit in a very strange world. Israel has a nation again. Currently, there's no temple, but they're talking about it. The priesthood have been identified, though not brought back into force yet. And they already have a red heifer. So preparation to restore the Jewish religion to exactly what it was at the time of Jesus is being put fast into action. 2,000 years later. Throughout Christendom, more and more religions and people are becoming obsessed, shall we say, with the ritualistic concept of religion without understanding the spirit of it. Even Paul himself says, in the law it is written, you shall not muzzle the oxen that threshes your grain. And then he poses a question. Do you think God was worried about oxen? No. You see, there was another element to law. And that element was a spiritual meaning behind it. Paul brings out the spiritual meaning and he says, the worker is worthy of his hire. Another commandment. Because that's what it meant. The Israelites who were given the law couldn't have a spiritual relationship with God because of their sin. They were children, unable to come to an understanding of what their role with God was to be. So they became as servants to him. They obeyed the law as it sounded to them. You come through the door, you close it. You walk on the right hand side of the road, not on the left. You eat with your knife and fork. You take sips of water between each bite. And so on. Everything was laid out as you would a small child who you were instructing. But as that child gets bigger, as they become older, it becomes pointless to tell them some of these things. You don't do that. And Paul's saying, God is treating us through Christ as inheritors of his kingdom. We're not servants, we're not children under the rules and regulations, but rather we are to understand how to behave. To look and see the fullness of Christ and to emulate him fully. Throughout the Old Testament, the Jews were told that God didn't want fasting, sacrifice, or offerings. God didn't want them from the Jews. What he wanted was mercy, love, concern, long-suffering. All the fruits of the Spirit. He wanted his image to be their character, not what they looked like. And that's the problem. We are made to look like God, but he wants us to be like him, to think like him, to act like him, and to respond in every situation as he did. He doesn't want to send us back to ritual. He wants to move us on to understanding. He doesn't want to have us as servants having to ask everything. What do we need to do for this and how do we do that and should we do this and should we do that? He wants us to walk and step out in faith, guided by his Spirit, knowing how he would do it if he were here himself. That's what the older child becomes. There's a Jewish custom. Well, more than a custom. It was something that was understood. That as a child got older, it would step into its parents' business, its father's business, so to speak. And as it became more and more able, it would take on more and more responsibility. So if you were used to dealing with the parent, over time you would end up dealing with the child. And the one thing that you would see as you continued in your relationship with them is that there would be no change. The child would think like the parent. The child would respond like the parent. And the child would do as the parent did. Exactly. That's what God wants from us, as his children, that we start to show this world him in every thought, word, and action that we do. So we learn a lot from Galatians. We learn a lot from Paul, even when he's angry. We see the perfect nature of God, and we realize we are not servants, we are his children.